Welcome to Awakening Souls,
a spiritual podcast for the mystics, magical thinkers, sensitives, and spiritual seekers.
We are here to explore all things spiritual, from navigating your awakening, developing your psychic gifts, and so much more.
Together with our combined experiences, we hope to help guide you on your path to reconnecting with your soul and the beautiful life that comes after.
So come join us on the magical journey of exploring your
awakening souls.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Awakening Souls. It's Candace and Jennifer here. I am really excited about our episode today. We've got a special guest here. Her name is Kate. She is a neuro-emotional coach, and I have had the pleasure of getting to know her over the last few months and getting to know her work a little bit and how incredibly impactful and empowering her work can be in terms of learning how to manage your emotions and sit with your emotions. We talk about emotions on our podcast all the time. They are kind of the foundation of being human, and it is not something that we can escape. So we talk about being in those high vibes. We talk about being in those low vibes. And it's important to embrace all of the vibrations within us, important to embrace all of the emotions within us. So we're going to talk about what that looks like with Kate today. Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. And I have also had so much fun connecting with you recently. And so I just really look forward to this opportunity and the conversation. I always, I could talk about this all day long. So anyone that gives me the chance, I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, tell us, what is it that you do? What is neuro-emotional coaching? And who are you?
Yeah, sure. So I am a certified neuro-emotional coach with the Center for Emotional Education, and we help people get better at feeling. We work with the flow of neurochemistry. So our work is based in the latest affective neuroscience and what we know of how emotions work in the brain. And so I love it because it's real scientific, real rock solid, real solid framework you can work with. And so I work with people one-on-one mostly. The center itself, we do a lot of group programs and different courses, but I work with individuals one-on-one, and I couldn't love it more. It's the best. Like, I love what I do. And so it's really meaningful to me.
So you help people get better at feeling. Tell us a little bit more about what that means.
Absolutely. So, you know, we are emotional beings we are constantly, I think, working with and coming up against emotion, whether that be our own or other people's. And most of us were not raised with much emotional safety or emotional awareness or intelligence. And so many of us are just out here reacting to what's coming up within us and what's coming up for others. And so when I mention helping people get better at feeling, it includes understanding how emotions work in our system, looking at the programming we have about how we feel about our feelings, which is a big player, and how we react to them individually. Mm-hmm. I think we all have our own unique programming around that. And the way I look at it is, this stuff is going on whether we want to look at it or not. Mm-hmm. and most of us are just out here in reaction to our life. And for me, I would much prefer to be in response to my life, like responding to my life and to what's coming up for me. And so this modality, this process really has given me the framework to be able to do that. And so it's really so fun to share with others as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're talking about being triggered, right? When we're reacting, it's because mm-hmm. there's been an emotion triggered within us. Most of us have grown up being a victim of our own emotions, being a victim of whatever we're feeling within us. And there's never really any more progress beyond that of just like, I have this emotion, and usually placing the blame on somebody else for elicting that emotion within us. But really, it's around our own programming and the way we learn to respond to emotions as we grew up.
Yes. And, you know, we really have I think culturally and sort of historically, the way we've related to emotional content is that people or things give it to us Like, I'm fine until you do that thing, or until I'm fine until my car breaks down. I'm fine until the tax bill comes, whatever. But that isn't, now we know that isn't actually how feelings or emotions work. Absolutely, of course, our circumstances impact our reaction, but it's not that simple. Most of us are walking around with all of our emotional history and our unexplored emotional content, like, in our system. And so if I've got some stored anger hanging out that hasn't been looked at, and if I happen to be sleepy that day or undernourished or dehydrated or something, and someone is unkind to me, my anger is going to go, ah, oh, that's a thing. I can use this thing to kind of come out and maybe hope to get my needs met. And so a lot of what we are coming up against is, okay, well, a lot of people use the word mirror. That's funny that I don't always say that word, but it's kind of like a reflecting back to us. It's information, right? If I have a strong reaction to someone or defensiveness or whatnot, then that is cluing me into what's going on inside of me already. Like, it was already in there. This person didn't come along and hand it to me. At least not that simply. We could argue, well, someone hurt, punched you, you got hurt, of course, but it's more complex than that.
You mentioned you don't usually use the term mirroring. And that's
Yeah.
funny because I use that term mirroring all the time when we're on this podcast. We're always talking about
Sure.
mirroring.
Okay, that just popped in. I'm like, I never say that. Okay, which we do talk about mirror neurons, but yeah, that
Right.
just
But
came to me.
actually, just last episode, we were talking about our internal state will be mirrored back to us in our environment through our external environment. So people are always mirroring back to us what we're really feeling on the inside, what needs to be healed, what is unhealed, or what.
Yes.
So I love that you're using that terminology because that's going to make so much sense to our audience about,
Audience, yeah.
how we're putting that together, right? Where we are each other's mirrors and we cannot learn more about ourselves without relationships. So
Totally.
it's so important for us to be self-aware of what is triggering us, what is coming up for us emotionally when we're interacting with the environment, with other people in relationships, so that we can go in and do some of the deeper work.
Yeah. If we want to, right? It's like the trigger is an
If we want to.
opportunity, right?
And sometimes we're triggered all the time. I mean, especially depending on what kind of emotional state you're in the majority of the time. I remember when I was going through my trauma phase of learning how to heal through some of those big traumas, I was triggered constantly. And it would be by some of the like most insignificant things, that just like the dirty house or the dishes not being done. But really, it was like my nervous system was on overload and I couldn't handle more.
Yes. No, I love that you speak to that, actually, because it's exactly how this works, right? On some days, one thing can not be that big of a deal. It's the whole spilled milk thing, right? Some days, one thing that might have upset us on one day doesn't upset us on another day. And it's really, that is dependent upon what's going on inside of us. So, we look at this as this balance system that we have internally. And on one side of this balance system, we have our resiliency. And in our resiliency cup is all of the things that tend to us, like good sleep, good food, safety. Do we have a home? That's your self-care, your yoga practice, your meditation practice, all the things that support you, your spiritual practice. And then we also have on this other side of the cup, our emotional content. And this cup for many of us is filled with our historical emotional content that hasn't gotten much tending to. And then also it's day-to-day stuff that gets peppered in on top. So it is like the car that broke down, or the kid that got sick and you had to change your day, or just all these little things that pop up that invite feeling, take up room in this space. And so, when we first start working with our trauma, like you were saying, when we first start working with our trauma, we are inviting historical emotional content to come up, right? We're taking a peek at it for maybe the first time in our life. And feelings love this. They love when we look at them. They love when we give them attention and meet their needs to be seen and heard and held. So if we've peaked a bit, all the sadness and shame and hurt and grief, whatever it is like, yes, give me more of this. Give me more witness. And so it's extremely common when we first open Pandora's box and peek at the things we haven't peeked at yet for everything to be activating to us, not because we're making it worse, but because we're actually creating more safety. And the more safety that we experience and the more permission to feel that we give ourselves and our system, the more feelings are going to come up. And for some people, that can be too much. And so they stop there, right? But for those of us who are along for the ride and interested in taking a look, I think it can be really useful to know that actually having more feeling come up and being activated more often is a sign of being neurochemically leveraged. We're not just storing and stuffing and surviving. We're actually moving into a phase of feeling, which, if we hopefully learn what to do with emotion, then can be quite productive for us.
So what do we do with that then?
Yeah, well, I think, right? So, what do we do with feelings? Because I think there's so much out there on Instagram and in the world, and it's like, feel your feelings, do this, feel your feelings. And I love that message, but we don't all, it doesn't always come with a how to do that. Like, what exactly does that mean, you know? And it can also be confusing because we may often mistake our, survival reactivity for emotional content. So many of us, we know like it's okay, it's safe to feel feelings, or you know, oh, that's a good idea. Like, yeah, I want to feel my feelings. I am feeling them. But a lot of times what we are doing is really being in the narrative of feelings, or the story of feelings, and we think I'm feeling them, but we never quite move through, you know, or don't feel better. We're not actually doing processing. We're just sort of like getting stuck in the feeling. And what I love about, you know, what I learned with the Center for Emotional Education, how I support others and how we teach others is that we have this really user-friendly framework to kind of recognize when we are actually in feeling, and what to do with that. So at the Center for Emotional Education, where I've received all of my training, we look at life, we look at everything through the lens of brain states, these three different networks of our brain, in which we are operating in one of them at all times, right? So at any given point in the day, we are in one of these systems. And at first, we have our survival system, our survival network. And this is what the system that people are probably the most familiar with. Our survival brain system is responsible for keeping us alive. It's responsible for our autonomic immune system, for our heart rate, for keeping us safe and living. And then we have our emotional network, our emotional system. And the emotional brain system is responsible for generating emotion. It's responsible for processing and networking emotion. Is there time and space to do feelings? Is there not time and space to do feelings, right? All of this is what the emotional system is checking for. And then we have our executive brain system. This is our favorite. We love executive brain. This is where we have access to compassion, to logic and problem solving. This is where our perspective lives, and hopefully our spiritual practice lives in this executive brain state when we can like connect to things like, you know, self and other awareness and compassion and care and creativity. All of that is in our executive network. And the way we move through these networks is rooted in neurochemistry. And we don't have to get too scientific there, but basically, when we are in our emotional system, one of two things can happen. We either get our emotional needs met or we don't. So, if we are in an experience of emotion and there is safety, there is time and support for our feelings, either support that we know how to give ourselves, or maybe there's a safe person to network with, then we get our needs for emotional safety met, to be seen, to be heard, and to be stayed in touch with. And if that is done well, then we are granted access neurochemically to our executive system. So if our emotions get tended to, then we move in this direction up the neurochemical ladder into our brilliant executive brain state. We actually process through. If we happen to be up against emotional content and it is not safe, there is no time, or maybe there's it's actively not safe, or we don't know what to do with these feelings, then our executive system and our emotional system shut down, and our survival system comes over to help tend to our emotional overwhelm. And the survival system can only do four things. It can fight, it can employ flight, it can freeze, or it can appease. Some people call this fawn, appease. We use appease because it rhymes and we like it. But fight, flight, freeze, or appease, that's what the survival system can do. And those four things are really, really good at keeping us safe. They're so good at keeping us alive, but they are not always great at living and thriving and relationships and jobs. And this is a really good setup. This design was set up as we were developing to keep us safe. So if we're in the cave and a predator runs in, and one of you sees the predator and goes into survival brain and runs, then my brain says, "Ah, this is a threat. I've got to come with you. My brain's going to pick up on your survival reactivity, and we're off to keep us safe. We're going to run away." So it's a really great network for staying alive. We do need it to a degree, but the tricky part is that most of us did not get enough emotional safety as our emotional system was developing to realize that our emotional experience was not a threat to our survival. So we came wired for survival, and then we have to learn our emotional processing system as we're growing via our environment and our caregivers. And that didn't happen for most of us for many, many reasons. Sometimes it was actively not safe in childhood. Other times it was loving and kind, but our parents just didn't know this stuff. And so when emotions came up, it was like, "You're fine," or "Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry," right? Our system got the signal that what was we were experiencing was not okay. And so our brain had to opt for survival wiring. And so what this means for many of us now is that most of us have become wired to respond to not only our emotional content, but life in general with fight, flight, freeze, or appease. And these things are tricky because we can imagine, I think a lot of people throw around fight or flight, and we think of a panic attack or, big fight or,
Or stress, even just like normal.
Yes, but it doesn't always, like sometimes it's subtle. Flight can be scrolling on Instagram, and looking for something better out there. Fight can be internalized, being really unkind to self. Freeze is, I think of freeze as depression, an extended state of freeze, just can't get things going. And then there's appease, which so many of us fall prey to, which is like saying yes when we really mean no. And it doesn't always look like, "Oh my gosh, I'm in survival brain," but there is dysregulation happening for us. So that's sort of the lens through which we work.
I just love that so much. It takes everything that we talk about and gives it a language and a dialogue that we just don't have for that experience, right? So what you're saying is that there's these three different brain states, and it starts with our survival brain. And when our survival needs are met, then it grants us access to look at that emotional stuff and to feel that emotional stuff. And when that is tended to with love and kindness, and you are bear witness to those emotions and you work through those emotions, then you are granted access. to your executive brain, which is that higher state of thinking, which is where we find compassion, which is where we find that oneness feeling, which is where I've been for the last couple of weeks, which has been incredible. And I don't want to brag about it or anything, but but I've never been in this executive brain. And up here, it's like, oh, I see things so much clearer. I have a broader perspective. I could be witness to my own emotions without identifying with my emotions. I could be a witness to your emotions without falling victim to your emotions, right? So there's so many benefits of working through your emotions and learning this information so that way you can work towards being an executive brain, right? We're talking about emotions all the time. And it's like, we think it's just that thing that kind of exists, but like we can ignore it. Like it's not something that really is wreaking havoc within our nervous system or within our body, but it is. And it's a silent thing that it is happening. And we have control over those emotions to an extent.
Absolutely. We definitely have, well, I love you just beautifully reflected all of that back to me. I realized I spoke for a very long time with a lot of information and you just took it in and regurgitated it so well. That's exactly right. And knowing what to do, like you were saying, this is just happening all around us. Yeah, for me, this system and understanding how to tend to each of these different networks, because they each have their own language, learning what to do with that means that I am not at the mercy of what's going on here or here. It means that I am no longer beholden to just reactivity. It means that I've got a really good sense of what's happening inside and a really good sense of what's happening outside. And even just seeing ourselves and the world through like, ooh, what brain state am I in right now? What brain state are they in right now? It really gives like a new level of understanding, which to me has led to also a lot of empathy. Yeah. And compassion and disconnection in a healthy way, right? Which is what you're speaking to, not disassociating from our feelings or, but a healthy separation of like, I am Kate here. And I think of emotional content as something I'm experiencing, right? I'm experiencing sadness. I'm experiencing anger. I'm experiencing dysregulation, right?
What do we do when we start to notice what kind of brain state that we've fallen into? And how do we become aware of what brain state we've fallen into?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, dysregulation, I mean, whenever we first start unpacking this for people, it's so much like this unfold. Mm-hmm. I work with someone, it just unfolds over time. But I love to speak to it a little and give a couple things that people can be on the lookout for. Mm-hmm. But I think I always think of just a mind of curiosity. In the beginning, when we first learned about this stuff, like just start to notice, like, what are, you know, she said, fight, flight, freeze, and appease. Like, what do I lean toward? You know, do I notice, like, am I the person that always says yes and then feels nothing but resentment because none of that was right for me? am I really reactive? Am I the fighter? Do I fight myself? Am I unkind inside? I think initially it can be interesting just to take a peek, right? Like, ooh, is this a survival brain moment or is this a feelings moment? Survival brain, like I said, is all about keeping us safe. And so oftentimes in survival brain, we have no body awareness. We are just in reactivity. And this is where, like, you've heard the story, you know, the surfer got the arm bit off by the shark and then they swam to shore and then they realized they were hurt. Like, our brain protects us to keep us alive. So it shuts everything down so that we can get to safety. And then when there's enough safety, feeling comes back. So when we are speaking to our survival system, if we're recognizing that there's survival reactivity present, and we want to soothe our survival system, we're going to do something that we couldn't do if we were running from a predator. So the survival brain loves a regulating breath, which is like a quick, full inhale and then a long, extended exhale. Mm-hmm. We couldn't breathe like that if we were in danger. Right? Survival brain, it's all about like getting back into the body, into safety. So survival brain, maybe it's like drinking a full glass of water, moving slowly, checking to make sure all the body parts are there. do I have a body? Like, I remember when my son was young and would start to tantrum, my system was picking up on that as if we were all gonna die. And so I couldn't remember much in that moment, but I could remember, do I have a body? And I would start like, okay, I've got my toes, I've got my elbows, I've got my armpits, I've got my ears, you know, like I want the whole system here. Right. So if we're looking at just tending to dysregulation in survival brain, then we want to do something that is something we couldn't do if we were in danger. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yep.
And there's
Yeah.
lots of options for that, like regulating breath work. Yeah, body scan, touch is great. You'll often find me just like hand on the heart, like I'm just making sure I'm still here.
I just love that so much because I'm constantly telling people and teaching people how to use their breath to regulate their state of mind, to regulate their mind, to regulate their system. And I get pushback, especially from family. Sorry to call you out, guys, but they push back because they don't understand how important it is to use your breath to remind yourself that you have a body, to that be back in the body, and to slow down the breath because your nervous system is on override right now. It's moving very quickly because it wants to keep you in survival. So by slowing down the breath, you are actually communicating to your brain, hey, I'm safe. I'm safe right now. And then it starts sending signals all down through your nervous system to calm your entire system down, to calm your brain, to calm your breathing, to calm your heart rate, and to release less cortisol levels and bring you back to a homeostasis.
Yes. And this is where the conversation of dysregulation and how to tend to it, I think there's a piece missing out in the world that I think we tend to is that sometimes people say, okay, I'm dysregulated. I'm going to regulate. I'm going to breathe and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to drink the water and do the thing and then I'm going to feel better. But this isn't always true. Because we might feel regulated, which regulated doesn't always equate calm. Regulated means I am in my body and I know that I am here in my body, right? Like I am here present to what's coming up for me. But as we just mentioned about brain states, we don't get to jump, unfortunately, from survival brain to executive brain. We've got to work our way through the networks, right? And so oftentimes, people will regulate, and that actually brings them closer to their emotional content. So they might start to feel more uncomfortable. And then, if we don't know what to do with that discomfort, our system goes, oh, I don't like that. I'm going to go back here. This is why you hear a lot of people in meditation practice, I can't meditate. It makes me anxious. It makes me
Yes.
anxious. It doesn't make you anxious. It's your system is sitting still. We cannot sit still if we're in danger. I guess freeze, you could play dead. But right, but if your system is getting the signal that I am safe here, and so all those feelings are like, is it time for us? You have space for me. So it's very common for us to get caught in a survival emotional brain loop, you know, where we might regulate and then we're presented with emotional content. And if we don't like it or want it or welcome it, we're going to swoop back in to survival brain, right? Does that make sense or is that helpful?
Yes,
Yeah, it's so
100%.
relatable, I think, especially probably people that listen here that have tried to, you know, play around with meditation practice or, you know, calm isn't always the goal. It's not the goal. Happiness isn't the goal. For me, it's more about, having the capacity to be with whatever's coming up for me without getting shot down into our survival brain more than we need to, right? We're not going to outrun this system. I want this here. If you know my kid runs into the street and there's a car, I want all the adrenaline and all the cortisol. I don't want to get rid of it, right? We want it when we need it, but this system was designed to run for 30 seconds, a minute at a time, but most of us are running it ad nauseam,
Constantly.
like nonstop, right? And it is exhaustive and it's not sustainable. That's why so many people are like, I need something, right?
So then what do you do once you've started to regulate, you've done the breath, you drink the water, you've remembered that you have armpits and toes.
I always go armpits. I don't know why.
I like that. It's a body part you don't pay much attention
Right.
to.
I thought, well, because I'm like, if I start sweating, if I'm in danger, right? I'm like, ooh.
So once you've done all that, and then the emotions start to bubble up, which I talk about this too, right? When we're sitting, I love what you said, when you're sitting in meditation and then you realize like your emotions are starting to bubble up, then you're like, oh shit. And then you fall back into survival mode and then you go through this loop.
Most of us move away from it, right? Because we weren't taught one. Like most of us just don't know what to do when it's there, really. And a lot of us, even if consciously we're at a place where, yeah, I can get behind this feelings thing. I want to do that. Our nervous system isn't trained in it yet. And so we haven't built up a window of tolerance for our own discomfort. And so the longer we can spend sitting with emotional content and remembering that we have a body, not getting shut back, our brain starts to go, oh, okay. So these sensations that accompany this feeling that we're calling anger, because that's language, isn't a threat. Because if Kate's sitting here with this and knows that she's sitting here with this, then we must be safe. And so over time, the more time we spend in feeling, our system just adapts. Literally, we're rewiring the brain. Right now, we've all got really great atrophied emotional processing systems. We're just slipping and sliding down these neural pathways towards survival, right? But what we're doing when we begin to engage with our emotional content is we're actually building new neural pathways of safety. And this just dropped in, which is really leading to more sovereignty. Like, the more when we know what we're working with and have the capacity to work with what's up for us, this is where we get to choose and design our life and all of those things. But what you asked for, what you were asking me was, what do we do with this emotional content, right? What do we do with it? And this is a really big conversation, but I love, or there are a few things I'd love to share about it here that could be of use to people, is our emotional. So if our survival network has needs, we need to prove physical safety to our system, right? So that's the language of the survival brain. So if I myself am in survival brain, I'm going to want to slow down. I'm going to want to not use many words. I'm going to just want to tend to this physical system. I'm like being called to bring up what to do with other people in survival brain, but that's a whole nother podcast. So then, when we are present with our emotional content, our emotional system has needs. It has its own language to be seen, to be heard, and to be stayed in touch with until it has received enough witness that it metabolizes on its own, integrates on its own. So we teach a practice called notice, name, touch. And this is unique to the center. I'm sure many people do versions of it, but this is ours. Notice, name, touch. When it comes to emotional content, first we have to notice we're having it, right? So we've got to just realize, oh, ding, 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 I'm in emotional brain. Sometimes emotional brain is very obvious. We're sad, we've got tears, right? Okay, emotional, got it. Other times, emotional brain looks like, just I'm irritated and like frustrated, and this happened and that happened. And we think I'm not having feelings. It's just that all this other stuff is going on. And if I fix those things, then the feelings will go away. And sometimes that works temporarily, but the fix rarely tends to the emotional energy that's inside of us. So even if we fix our external circumstances, there's still a case for tending to emotional content. So anyway, first things first, we have to notice. One of the ways that emotions get our attention is through narrative. So we have a feeling, and then that feeling starts telling a story. I can't find my wallet and my keys, and I'm going to be late for work. And we're just often swept up in the story and fixing the story. When I'm watching my own mind, I'm on the lookout for words like always. This always happens to me. Never. You never clean up after yourself. Always, never, should. Should's a really great one. I'm having anytime I'm like, I should be doing this, or I shouldn't be doing that, or I should, this isn't how I should handle this situation. That's a Kate clue that I've got feelings, right? And I don't actually know yet how I want to handle this situation, because all of that's available to me executively. So when we are noticing, so first is notice, right? Am I having emotional content and learning those kind of clues? I think I'll just leave this with those three, but always, never, should. Anytime I'm trying to figure something out and can't, it's because I'm in a mode, I've got feelings in the way. So noticing we're an emotional brain, and then seeing if we can name a few things that we are feeling. And we often recommend naming at least two or three. I go three or four, because sometimes what we name initially is just the surface. It's just the umbrella. It's the most acceptable, right? We can, many of us, you tell people, what are you feeling? Stressed, frustrated, right? It's like, well, what else is under there? So often the first thing we name is the most palatable and the most comfortable. Like, well, I'm just stressed out. I'm feeling frustration. What else, right? If we peek, there might be something like loneliness. There might be shame. There might be, hurt. So naming a few feelings. When we hit the nail on the head, when we go, oh, it is loneliness, our brain gets the experience of being matched, of being heard, and it's palpable, right? Like you can feel it, and the brain goes, yes, I like this. And then we talk about staying in touch with the feeling. And this can look like a few different things. Energetic touch, which is empathy, right? Oh, I see you. I'm in this with you. Our brain loves empathy, real empathy. So we can give that to ourselves if we're talking about this in terms of ourselves. So this might look like, of course, Kate, like, of course, there's loneliness here. That makes so much sense for you. I could see why anyone would be feeling loneliness right now, right? Some energetic touch. Also, physical touch. And I love physical touch. Well, I like it, period, but I like it for everyone here because many of us that are peeking at these feelings, our system is not sure about them yet. So it's going to want to start dropping body parts offline. So I bring in, like, I love a hand to the heart, squeezing your neck, like just the arms, like whatever touch feels good. And also, accompanying that with a regulating breath. So, like, we're just in touch with us in this experience that we've named. Sometimes our feelings, it might be very obvious what they need. Like sometimes if I name something like loneliness, my system just gives up the tears and then I get to just cry and not follow the narrative, but just let that release happen. Sometimes our feelings want action or activity or vocality. I think a lot of people, especially for those of us who have spiritual practices and who are on the lookout for like, or maybe just don't feel comfortable with anger. We might try to just keep breathing and squash that and make that anger go away. But my anger does not want to go away. It wants expression. It wants a controlled explosion, right? Which is very different than survival reactivity of fight. So I might be present to some anger and maybe I need to like shake or dance or scream in a pillow or whew, do some workout, like do something intentional. So, what our feelings need is something that is so unique to each of us and also dependent upon the moment. Sometimes I connect to anger and then I just cry. Other times I connect to anger and I'm like, like I'm not, there's no tears in sight. I am just, whew, got this energy and I'm going to do something with it. And so, again, such a bigger conversation, but notice, name, touch. Notice we're having feelings, name them, see if you can resonate with them. For those of us who don't have an extended emotional vocabulary, sometimes we might just name like, ugh, or yuck, it doesn't, it's less about getting the name right on the chart and more about what's resonant, what resonates with you and gives you the experience of being seen. And then empathy, even just for those of you who are listening to this and want to play around with it, just starting with that piece. And sometimes self-empathy comes very easily for people, and other times it's really challenging. So I do want to say, as a, like a little caveat, if giving yourself empathy for your discomfort is not easy for you, maybe just try like validating, like, yep, that is true at this moment. Like maybe we don't have empathy yet. Maybe we don't like it, right? But just like that is happening right now. Like whatever low-hanging fruit, like whatever you can grasp to that is giving you this experience, or just staying in the body.
I just want to say, when you are naming the emotions, when you're allowing yourself to witness and name those emotions and sit with those emotions, you are proving to your body then and to your nervous system that it is safe and it is okay to have these emotions. Therefore, you can then start to discharge or release those emotions from your body.
Yeah, we actually get a chance then to do to allow emotional processing. For most of us, we inadvertently interrupt that process for ourselves and for each other. We often want to come in with the resiliency and give logical, factual information, but that is executive brain business. Feelings ap actually operate in a completely different network of the brain than does fact. So, when we're having feelings and we try to tell ourselves why we don't need to have these feelings, we are interrupting our emotional processing system, right? Like, Kate, you don't have to be worried about this. It's all going to be okay. There's no reason to worry, right? And yes, like I'm a grown woman with lots of experience and resiliency, and so I can see logically this will probably end up okay. But the energy that's happening in my system is like, I don't speak that language. None of this is helping me, right? So I'm either stuffing that to save it up for later when something else happens, and then it's going to come out even bigger. Or I can say, like if my resiliency is in a great place that day, I can say, this is probably going to work out fine, but oof, I am nervous. Like my tummy's a little nervous, like my heart's racing. Right? That's another thing we can do. Notice somatically, where are these feelings coming up? Like, ooh, my throat, like I've got a lump in my throat. My armpits are sweaty. Bring that one back in. Belly, right? Just noticing, where do these feelings live? And as to what you were saying, yes, the more we do that, the more we stay in the experience of feeling, a few things are happening. One, our system is learning, oh, when all these sensations come up together here, it isn't the threat that I once thought it was, because Kate's able to sit down and be in awareness and have a full body. And that's beautiful in the moment. But what happens over time is we are rewiring our brain toward a more robust emotional processing system, one that gets to like be with and move with feelings. And then we're also, in that process, I wanted to repeat what you said, Candace. We are also giving our system the chance to come up on the other side of that stress response, right? To move through fully and get more executive functioning. We can see this with, it's so easy with kids, and I'm a parent. And so, the ice cream falls off the cone and the kid's upset, and we go, oh, it's, I can just, no big deal. Like, I'll just get another ice cream. We don't have to be upset about this. Don't cry. We're stopping it because we want to teach them, look, life is okay. It's going to be okay, right? We're trying to teach resiliency at them, which is very different from giving the nervous system a chance to experience their own resiliency. So if the kid's ice cream falls off, and I were to just kneel down and say, oh, shoot, right? Maybe they cry. Maybe they're angry. If I were to let that be, give them touch if they want touch, give them empathy and time, odds are that little kid would work through the feeling and then look up and go like, can we go get another one? And I'd say, you betcha, right? Like we get to go do that. And that is the nervous system experience of moving all the way through. But we often stunt that process for others and ourselves because that's what we got. That's how we were used to meeting our emotional content.
I've noticed being able to do that for myself so much more within the recent months. And then by doing that for myself, I've been able to do it with my family as well. And it really does take you out of, like, what we were talking about earlier, of taking you out of their experience of the emotion and being able to just sit and witness and empathize with them and show them resonance of it's okay to feel this emotion. And then you watch them figure out how to solve their problem by themselves. And it's like it takes all the weight off of my back to not have to feel like I need to fix everything right away as a parent or as like a friend or a family member. It's like, we talk about how empaths always have this need to want to hurry up and fix other people because it makes us feel safe. But by doing this work for yourself, you're able to sit back and say everyone has this capacity to fix their own problems. They just need to process through the emotions and move through that wave in order to get to their own executive brain system to find the solution.
Yes. And so when we speak about people who are empathic and also people who are appeasers, right? Like, oh, let me get in there and fix this. It's really self-serving, right? Like the fix is really for so that we don't have to feel uncomfortable. But if what I hear you correctly is once we start tending to what is uncomfortable within us, we actually then have the capacity to sit with what is uncomfortable for you. And for those of us who do have a natural call toward helping or serving others, we are actually of more service in this way than we are if we just fix. So every time I fix something for my kid or, a friend or whatever, I am just stunting their processing system. This isn't to say that we can't help out, of course. I hope that's not to be misunderstood. But we also get to team up and help out when they're back in executive brain, right? And like, how do you want me? How can I be? How can we? I help you with this problem. Maybe they now need help, or maybe they don't. They get to decide. But yeah, and actually, like we were saying, we get to do less. Like, I don't have to pick up the blocks that fell. I don't have to go buy the Lego. I don't have to like jump in the car and oh, you're lonely? Let me see who what neighborhood kids are available. I don't have to do those things. I could just be with you when you're upset and then see what's on the other side, right? Often, what's on the other side is either the thing we were upset about is no longer an issue. Often, it doesn't matter anymore. We were just using it to have feelings. Or sometimes we're through the feelings and then we realize, okay, there is something here that needs tending to still, either like a need that needs to be met or a preference or, a problem, right? Like an actual problem. Like we can have feelings about what's going on in the world, and we have integrated our feelings, and there's still like social injustice. Like we still have things to tend to. But yes, so a lot of the times when we know how to support, and we cannot do it for each other if we can't do it for ourselves. Like I had to build up my own window of tolerance for discomfort to then be able to sit with other people while they are dropping theirs on me, because my brain would have just like we like you spoke to mirroring earlier, we have mirror neurons. We're going to activate each other, and that's designed to keep us safe. But we also are designed to network emotional content. We aren't designed to contain all of the emotions we experience. And so we can either be tending to our emotional capacity along the way, or we can stuff it and save it, and then survival brain's going to come over and take care of it for us. We don't get to get out of it. We either have a better chance at having more capacity and window of tolerance for our uncomfortable stuff, or survival brain's going to come in and take it over for us. Which is great that it can do that because it has kept us alive thus far. But most of us just don't like any action we take from survival brain. Like we're going to have more feelings on the other side, right? I blow up and scream and yell. I go full fight. I hate that. Like on the other side, and then I've got more shame, more uncomfort, more discomfort, So yeah, I love getting to have more choice and getting to design my life and respond to my life rather than react to my life. What I love so much about supporting the people I support and all of my clients and sharing this stuff with the world is like, I did this. I was full survival brain for most of my life, most of my adulthood. I'm sure I had some charismatic moments or some, whatever emotional moments, but I survived and survived and survived and survived. And I have completely, I have rewired my brain and have such a vast window. And this doesn't mean that I don't get triggered. It doesn't mean that I don't have my own survival moments, of course, when we're tired, under-resourced, when needs haven't been met, we're not going to outrun our systems. But I'm always like, if I can do this, like literally anyone can do this. Like it's not We say it's not rocket science, it's brain science. And if you engage with it, you cannot help but affect change, brain change.
Given me a lot to think about.
Yeah, this is one of those episodes that just really
Opens
make
up. It
makes
opens
you
up a can of
think.
worms.
Yeah, it does. So I invite anyone who's listening to this, like, we are unpacking so much information here in one short episode. Come back to this episode, listen to it again, start to use some of these things that Kate has talked about, learning to have that awareness of your body, find your armpits, find your toes, find your ribs.
Everybody's going to be doing an armpit check now that I brought it
And then when you start to realize, like, oh shoot, I'm in survival mode. Okay, then we can start to pinpoint where in survival mode are you? Are you appeasing right now? Are you? And we're going to move in and out of those things. I notice that all the time, that, like, okay, in this moment, I am moving through a fight. I'm angry. I am, like, having that outburst. And then I'll move into, like, appease. Okay, let me fix it. Let me, like, we're going to move in and out of all these states. We have to learn how to have fluidity. So come back to this episode and come back and listen to, each section with the emotional brain and then moving into the executive brain, so that way you can learn how to integrate some of this stuff for yourself. But also know that you are fully supported. We are here for you as energetic healers to help you work through that stuff. And Kate is also here, and we're going to give you her information so you can go back. Maybe you can work with her. Maybe you can inquire about working with her or how to learn how to do this work for yourself.
Yeah, I love, Candace, that you mentioned coming back to re-listen, because this is information that it isn't a one and done. We don't hear it one time and go, oh, I figured that out, right? Because some of us are listening to this in survival brain, which doesn't remember information. And some of us are listening to it in emotional brain, which muddies up information. And so I love the idea of coming back to listen to it at different times. Also, I do want to say that I am available for support and offer anyone who's listening here a complimentary introductory or information session. We call it a Feel Better Already session. And the reason I do this is because this is big, impactful information. And for those of you who it does resonate with, you start to kind of go, for some people, it's just fascinating and you want to learn more. And for other people, you go, oh, shoot. This is my whole life. And I made that decision in survival brain and this decision in survival brain. It can land. And so it actually isn't in integrity for me to give all this information and then go away. It's actually in integrity for me to say, if this information is landing with you and you have questions or curiosity, yes, obviously people pay to work with me, but I also want to give people the opportunity to, bring how it relates to them personally, and kind of ask any questions in that way.
Yeah, how can our listeners reach you?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the two easiest ways to reach me are probably via my email, which is heykatecollins@gmail.com. It's heykatecollins@gmail. And then my Instagram, which is at Hey Kate Collins, so HeyKateCollins. And you can reach out to me, yeah, either DM or email. And if you share with me that you listen to me here, I would happily send you a link where you could hop on my schedule and book, we call it a Feel Better Already session, to have a chat and flesh out some of what you learned. So I'd be happy to share that with you, and always welcome people reaching out and getting in connection.
Love it. And we'll keep her information in the show notes so you can find her there. Kate, it has been incredible having you on. This so jam-packed with such juicy information. This is not the only time we're going to have you on, because I know that we can go in so many different avenues with all of this information and learn how to apply it and integrate it for ourselves. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for being in my life and for helping me learn how to use this work as well. And we'll see you next time.
Forward to it. Yes, thank you so much for having me.